because I never really had any plans at all for a career. It's just grabbing the neck. It's like climbing a ladder with a fire below you, you know? You look at below, you think, well, it's a fire. I don't really want to fall into it. And fire for me would be boredom and boredom, really. But that's that. So you just climb the next ladder and climb the next rung. What else can you do? I can do that, just about do that. But could I do that and that? And, you know, go to the top. And then you get to the top and think, well, where do I go from the top? But I could jump over there and do that, you know? So it's looking forward all the time. I don't know where I get it from. I really don't. But, and I've only really thought about it recently.
Well, hello and welcome to this show of What I Wish I Knew. I'm with Mike Irwin and delighted to welcome on the show today a lady, Nikki Godding, and talking through with her a little bit about her experience and where she got to, where she got to. It's fascinating. And the way I kind of reflect on it is she went to or grew up in Shrewsbury and went to a public school and started life, if you like, with a solid backbone of knowledge, learning, etc. But she decided to leave after her O levels, and then I kind of reflect that she switched the sat nav off, and from there on she kind of went off and did other things. So from secretarial work to barmaid work, and then she switched the sat nav back on, and the feeling I kind of get here is that she's got so much background experience that I'm delighted for her to share with us about understanding how people work and finding her way, and particularly in the communication and PR world, she's kind of built on that and developed a superb success, not just from the UK, but moving internationally into Europe, and there's some wonderful stories there. And then finally coming back to, I think she described it as not just building up a business and an innovation, a PR platform, but she talks about rocking the Cotswolds. And I'm fascinating to find out a bit more about what that means and what Nikki did. So welcome to the show, Nikki.
Thank you.
And just I kind of talked about it as switching the sat nav off, but just before that, could you share us a little bit about your background, family, and just that early part of your life, which I'm sure the listeners will find fascinating?
Sure, yes. Well, I grew up in Shrewsbury in a very happy family. My dad and his brother ran a business together, a photographic business, photographic and art gallery business. They were staunch Salopians. The family had been there for many generations and was well known. And my dad and his brother were so close that we lived all down the road from each other, which was great fun. We weren't exactly in each other's houses, but they went to work together. They came home at lunchtime. They went back. So it was a really lovely family. Family life. We had holidays on the north coast of Wales in a caravan. And I'm sure it rained a lot, but I don't remember the rain at all. All I remember is wandering around on lovely sands in Abersock Bay and just enjoying myself. It was lovely, really good, nice. And school was not hard. It was a private girls' school, which was great. And, you know, we were all asked to, it was all indicated that perhaps we ought to find a lovely man to marry. This was the 1970s after all. Well, I didn't do that for some years later, but it was very old fashioned. My sister stayed at school longer than I did. I left when I was 16 because I really was a bit of a stroppy teenager. And I just went into doing the only thing that you can do when you leave school so young is do a secretarial course and then become a barmaid, whatever you like to call it.
And from that, I mean, again, you describe in your experience that it's a kind of tenet that you hold now of what you learned from that. Yeah, the important pieces of how you interact.
I think with growing up in a very loving family, it gives you a huge amount of confidence in yourself, I think. In fact, some arrogance, but I think I was quite an arrogant teenager, which is why I left school so early, because I thought I could do it all myself. I don't think that matters, because actually I think arrogance settles down into a sort of innate confidence later if you're sensible and you learn about yourself. So I think you know, which is why I get terribly sad these days when there's so many broken families, because I consider myself supremely lucky to have grown up in the environment that I did.
And I guess with that, though, you talked about the interface with people and persons, yeah. And that strikes a chord with you in terms of you talking about, and we talk about the What I Wish I Knew show, but just having those early experiences of exposure and a lot of social intercourse, yeah?
Sorry, yes. You're talking still what I'm still at school, still at home, or a little bit further on from that? Are you talking?
Yeah. When you talked about when you left school and you were a secretary and a barmaid, and you about the qualities that came, an experience that came.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, yes. I think, you know, coming out of school, because the school was lovely, private and a bit narrow-minded, really. Coming out and becoming a barmaid, you know, I mean, you have to deal with all sorts of people, whether they're drunk or sober or lecherous or sad, and they want to tell you their life story. All of those things. It is the best education, I think, my kids later on, I said, you must work behind a bar. You've got to learn how to handle people at they're the most supremely happy, or they're utterly miserable, or they're trying to impress you, and you've got to understand how they tick. And I think the entire world, I don't think you should go into the army or the services. I think everybody should do 6 months behind a bar. That's we'd all be much better people for it. I'm sure it would.
That's fantastic. So talk about that. So you take this forward, and, you know, one of the things that kind of came out in reading about your background, Nikki, and in our prior conversation is that, you know, you have this adventurous, you know, spirit, obviously, but you're also thoughtful in a sense that, you know, you look at these experiences and look at what you learned, and, you know, being a barmaid was one part of that. Is that something that you found that was kind of innate to you, or is it something you built over time?
Built over time. Well, actually, yes. I've always looked forward and not back, always. So, which is why I've jumped to about a dozen different things, or probably about four different sectors I've worked in over my life. But I've always looked forward and never really thought about what was happening. But it's interesting, if I fast forward a little bit. I did mention earlier about 17 when having had this wonderful upbringing and lovely time, my sister died of skin cancer, which is a shock. And it really brought, whilst I was just learning to find my feet, and then all of a sudden this crashing calamity of a family issue came round, which none of us didn't know how to deal with. A couple of things I learned from that really was, we don't talk about death enough. I found that a lot of people, when my sister died, they were good friends or good acquaintances, and they would cross the other side of the street to deal with, rather than actually have to face up to it. This was in the 1970s. So there was we hadn't found our hearts and our souls, and we couldn't bear our emotions at that stage. So rather than So I think I kept all that bottled up, although I didn't realise I kept it bottled up for many, many years. But there was one catalyst, which I discovered I'd bottled it up, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But I found that I was getting to know people and finding my wings, if you like, as an adult. And then this terrible family calamity happens with the death of your sister, you know, much loved, all the rest of it. My whole family dealt with it in a sort of our own way. We looked quite close as a family, but actually we were spinning on our own little orbits without really including each other. So I left home at that point and went on to the next stage of my life. But fast forward quite quickly, my sister died. I was 17 when my sister died, and she was 24. And bearing in mind, I'm a very positive, open person, but I only realised that actually it was having this had continued to have massive effect on me when my son got to the age 24. And I realised all of a sudden, he was my oldest child, she was the oldest daughter. And I didn't realise I was in an utter mess when he was 23, 24, because I thought there's this weird thing inside you where you think, I can't be lucky enough for my child to live beyond this age, you know. So the fact that he did, and he's now 31, 32, and he's fine, and he's with a lovely, lovely lady and all the rest of it. But I didn't realise, and it was only after he got past that age that my sister was when she died, and I realised actually I was possibly lucky enough to have this incredible family, and it was all going to be okay, touch wood, touching wood here, that it was all going to be okay. And I sort of defrosted, and thinking about it, it was that defrosting after 7 years, 7 or 8 years, it was defrosting after 20 years of her after her dying. And it was only after that, when he was 24 and I was about early 40s, I think, 50s or early 40s, that I actually started to really build my life. But it's only looking back on it that I realised that I didn't give myself time to grief, because in the 1970s, you weren't really allowed to. And with my stiff upper lip family background, however loving it was, you probably didn't really bear your soul. So I think that actually this new feeling of wearing your heart on your sleeve, whilst I think it's probably gone too far, is a good thing, because I'm love what I do now, but I wonder what more I would have done had I not frozen for those years, because I was so scared that one of my children was going to, wouldn't make it beyond 25. Very weird, really. So there we go. So that was one really big thing. I wish I'd known that I could have shared how I felt sooner.
That's really interesting, Nikki. I guess alongside though, the experiences that you had in conjunction with that, you know, you talked about in the barmaid and the secretarial, and then you took a a route into PR.
Yeah.
Was that a kind of an area that you knew was something you were interested in, or did it just come your way and you grasped it?
Okay, basically, I worked as a secretary for a delightful man who ran a PR consultancy, and I sat alongside him just typing, and I realised that actually I could write just as well as he can. It was a nice surprise for both of us, actually, because I could start to write for him a little bit, he could pass a bit over, and I discovered this skill I never thought I had before. So it was seizing an opportunity, I think. We were doing very dull stuff, really, but it was learning about writing with him, realizing I could do it. As I say, I'd left school quite young and left really prepared for bugger all. I wasn't prepared for anything. I wasn't qualified apart from to shorthand typing, but shorthand typing is brilliant because we all need to type, and shorthand is a great skill, and I use it even now, even though I've got a tape recorder when I go out interviewing people. I seized the opportunity. It's the only thing you can do at the time, and actually it paid me very well, because it meant that I could later on, 2 or 3 years later, when I was looking for something to do, I was able to do that from home around the kids. So that was good. So again, you know, I do fly from one thing to the other, but PR is fun because you can embrace a project, you can embrace a campaign, and then move on to do something else. So that's what I did, really. So seizing the opportunity.
So thinking about that, Nikki, I mean, you're someone who, you know, you've had so many different experiences, right? So you've been an international PR expert. You've traveled the world doing, you know, amazing things in PR. You are a publisher, creator of, you know, magazines multiple times. So you've done that. You're doing that. You've also created a movement with Rock the Cotswolds. And I wonder if you were to talk to your 20-year-old self now, would your 20-year-old self be surprised in any way about what Nikki's gone on to become, of what Nikki's gone on to do?
Yes, definitely. I'm hesitating because this problem is, it's quite difficult thinking what I wish I'd known, because it's the hardest question I've ever been asked, because I always only ever looked forward, as I say. So looking back and thinking, what would I have told myself? Oh yes, because I think at 20, I wanted a husband, I wanted children, I wanted all the things I thought that I needed, and I did need, and I do need, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. But what I didn't realise was that actually there's a world out there for the taking. And I think that the more I've done, the more I've wanted to do. So yes, would my 20-year-old self be surprised? I think she would be, yes. Because I never really had any plans at all for a career. It's just grabbing the neck. It's like climbing a ladder with a fire below you, you know? You look at below, you think, well, it's a fire. I don't really want to fall into it. And fire for me would be boredom and boredom, really. But that's that. So you just climb the next ladder and climb the next rung. What else can you do? I can do that, just about do that. But could I do that and that? And, you know, going to the top. And then you get to the top and think, well, where do I go from the top? But I could jump over there and do that, you know. So it's looking forward all the time. I don't know where I get it from. I really don't. And I've only really thought about it recently. But it's trouble about looking forward. Sometimes looking forward is not a good thing, because actually looking back, you learn what you reflecting is, I find it very difficult.
That's a really interesting point though, Nikki, because I joked earlier about the sat nav, and it's happened to all of us through our careers. But really, I've also feel from how you've described this, and with your energy, and I think somebody described you as sparky, but with that energy and magnetism, that you do look at things with glass half full all of the time, and you say, you know what, that there's a way here, or there's something that I'd like to embrace. And again, thinking about what I wish I knew, you know, would you recommend, or would you describe that to you, and would you recommend that's a tenet we should all think about?
What, thinking glass half full rather than glass half empty? I would, yes. I mentioned earlier the fact that I didn't realise until my son got to the age of my sister when she died that I'd frozen. And I do still, I think that quite, that's the most self-reflective thing I think I've ever thought about, frankly. But I think sometimes people are a bit too negative. They do look for problems, whereas I tend to look for ideas, not solutions, it's a horrible word, but I look for new things to do, new ways to embrace life. I think you have to, because there's so much that life has to offer. Even now in lockdown, there's so much that life has to offer, even though sometimes it's quite hard to find, that it's better for your soul, better for your mental health if you try and look forward and not back. There's always something new around the corner, always something you can be doing if you really think about it, I think.
But that's not very British though.
Sorry?
That's not very British though.
No, is it not? Can't help that, I'm afraid.
No, I'm joking. But one of the things that, you know, it struck me on what you were saying, and there's a saying that, you know, worrying is practicing for a disaster that hasn't happened. Mm. And I feel, you know, as you talked about that kind of adventurous spirit, and, you know, you talked about the confidence that came from coming from, you know, from the fact that you had a stable family background. And do you feel like your willingness to freelance, if you will, I mean that, you know, experiment and figure things out, do you feel like that comes from, you know, that positive outlook you talked about? Does it come from a sense of confidence, or does it come from a sense of like adventurous spirit?
I think it comes from a sense of confidence. And I think that comes from an incredibly stable upbringing. This sounds it sounds really smug, actually. And I don't mean it to sound smug, but I count myself so supremely lucky that, as I say, I had this base of whatever appalling things I did. And I do remember doing some appalling things when I was small. I mean, I really do. Behaving really badly. God knows. But I never felt not loved, whatever I did. So I think, is it nature or nurture? There's that long discussion, isn't it? You know, is it nature or nurture that makes you who you are? I think it's probably a mixture of both. I think the innate confidence coming from that I was lucky enough to have as a child, and the arrogance which built into confidence. But again, I don't know. It's nature. I look at things perhaps in a more positive way than other people do. There's always an answer, I think. Touch wood, there has been so far. There's always been an answer to something, really. I don't like running away from things. So there's always a way of getting around things. So yes, I don't know. I think it comes from inside. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know, you know, I don't know where it goes. I mean, quite personal, really, but most of my family had a problem with drink. They drank a lot. I don't. I can drink or I cannot drink. It really doesn't matter. I don't know, you know, where is this coming from? All these weird things, you look at your family background and think, what makes me who I am?
Yeah.
And some of the family does that. Yeah. And others, I don't know where it comes from. It's just nosiness. Yeah. Yeah. You want something better. I don't particularly want to be rich. I don't want to be wealthy. I think that brings more problems than it actually, than it solves. I want to be confident and safe and have the people I love around me, because that's, for me, what makes life living. It's the people thing. And that's probably, that's definitely why I do what I do, because I meet a lot of people, like you guys. I meet a lot of people. I either see them in face-to-face if I'm interviewing them, or I talk to them on Zoom. And people are always, I've met one person that was not inspiring, one CEO, and I will tell you about him in a minute. But every other person I've met, they've always got something about them. And it can be the CEO of a big company, or it could be a bloke who's pushing paper clips around a table. If you take the time to listen to what they've got to say, they always have something good to talk to you about. There's always something they've got to say. Going back to what I haven't talked much about, Rock the Cotswold, which is the campaign we launched to get people out of cities and living the country life. And the reason we do that is that if you get people out of cities and living in the countryside, and these are young, productive people, they can boost the economy of rural areas that would struggle. Gloucestershire is a good example. Is, I think, the demographic, I think the average age is about 65. It's horrendous, you know. But you need young people to drive those economies forward. But if you take them out and put them in a different place, they can be people that they never knew they could be before. And that's exciting. I love that. Sorry, I go on a bit, because I do think it's hugely important. I don't think we invest enough time in people as they are, you know. You can educate people all you like, but actually it's looking at the core of that person and seeing what they're good at and what they can do and what interests them. Because if you're interested in something, then you'll fly, really.
I'm just going to unlock something here, Nikki. You exude warmth and energy, and I'm just thinking, you talk about entrepreneurs that you enjoy and other people, you know, is the unlocking of you know, the interest that you have with companies and businesses and people and the energy, does that come from you, really?
I don't know, I suppose so, in a little way, yes. I don't know, yeah.
So in other words, I think the story of the gentleman you met that then moved on, and then suddenly, you know, with your energy and warmth, he kind of exuded or was allowed to exude. And I'm just thinking on the What I Wish I Knew and throughout your life and your career. And for me and Mike, I'm sure Mike will say the same. You just exude warmth and energy. And that's got to be kind of synergistic piece.
I think so. I mean, there's no doubt, seriously, as I was never taught to interview people, but what you discover is that if you're open, you get more out of people, and if you share, I think you get more out of people. And again, if you're interested, I soon learned the best way to interview somebody was like this, which is, you're not sitting taking notes. I put my little microphone in front of somebody and say, we're going to have a little chat here. I'm going to turn it on. There you go. I'm not going to write anything down. And you can actually look at people's faces. You can see their eyes and you can feed off them and they feed off you. It does help sometimes. The lovely thing about being older, and this is something I wish I'd told myself when I was younger, is the lovely thing of, don't be scared about being older, because people feel much less threatened by you. So what they will, I mean, I'm a bit fussy, you know, I've got grey hair, too long, haven't been to the hairdressers for God knows how many months. But I go into an office and they see this grey-haired lady and they don't feel threatened at all. So they do talk to me a little bit more as well. So how you dress, you know, how you speak, how much you listen. Sometimes I talk too fast, but you know, it is. Yes, I think you get more out of people that way, and not being afraid of silences as well. That's how you get more out of people as well. That's another interviewing technique, which is, don't be afraid to shut up, because somebody has a silence.
Well, that's a great thing, because it's so hard to fill. And when I was in university, I was in a you know a journalism degree, and there's a professor that we had on the reporting course who we had to go meet with once a week, and his technique was he would walk into his office and he would say nothing, you know, and other than like acknowledging your presence, but that was pretty much it. And his whole thing was, people always want to fill the space, right? They always want to fill it with words. And if you're a reporter, that's to your benefit. So he goes, you need to learn to use silence, you know, tactically, and think about what are you really trying to get, or ask questions that cause people to have to respond rather than kind of, yeah, you know, closed-minded things. But I think, you know, one of the things that is so fascinating about you, I keep kind of going back to these phases of your life. You know, you leave home, you're young, you take a secretary course, you become a barmaid, you eventually, you know, get into PR, you do all these things and start magazines, and you start, you know, at events and all this kind of stuff. You're in events. And if you think back about all of those things and the things that you've learned through those experiences, Nikki, and let's just kind of set the stage here. The world has to listen to you for a few minutes about what you've learned in your life. What would you say?
Don't be afraid to try something new. It's not a new phrase, but you know, they always say that if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you always got. And somebody told me that about 25 years ago, and it's absolutely right. So don't be afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid, because you know, because it'll be exciting, and exciting drives enthusiasm, which drives positivity. Don't be afraid of failure, actually. But I don't know how to say this really, but also try and manage, just in case you do fail, just manage it. Don't be stupid. Don't be reckless. Don't be reckless, is what I'm trying to say. So try new things, but also think through what could be the issues if you fail. So I might be sparky and open, all the rest of it, but I'm not stupid. So try, I think I got to a stage in my life where actually I'd launched two new magazines. I was still doing PR. And I ended up in hospital with a burst appendix, which is probably stress related. Well, I think I probably learned from that. Don't try to do too many things, you know. And the reason I was carrying on with doing some of the stuff is because I wanted to make sure that there was still money coming in the bank, to allow the other things to fail. But actually that was stupid. So you can go too far, but don't be afraid of failure, but do try and prepare a little bit for failure, because there's no point being gung-ho about something. You do need to be aware of the consequences of the possible consequences of what you're doing. So be crazy, but don't be reckless, is what I'm trying to say.
That's fascinating. And tell us a little bit about your, you know, again, you talked about it as an interesting chapter and a learning for you in your career and life, when you kind of stationed yourself in Europe and the kind of the impact I think you described to me a while ago on cultures and the whole experience.
Yeah, important this, I think. about 10, 15 years ago, I started doing some PR for an international organisation, which didn't take me internationally, but it took me across Europe and some of the dark corners of Europe that were just sort of coming out of the Eastern European feel at the time. Now, bear in mind, I was a girl from Shropshire, which is a rather rural area. And then I moved to Gloucestershire, another rural area, having had a few years in London, but basically a rural girl with a family. So jumping on a plane and heading to Warsaw before it started being built up again, or Bucharest, or Budapest in Hungary, all these places, it was like going into the back end of beyond. It was like going to China, which I went to actually quite recently, but going there completely like a fish out of water, didn't know what I was doing. I started with people with funny accents, you know. Hungarian, you know, they speak with a very funny accent. Having to listen to people a bit more. And, you know, you get to a new country and if you're not going on there on holiday, it's a completely different smell and feel. And, you know, you have to talk on your own to taxi drivers and people you'd never met before. And it's a really weird way of, you know, you have to learn on your feet, I think. And So it was experiencing that, you know, Turkey was another, Turkey was an interesting place because I was doing, Turkey's carved up into the East and the West. You probably know in Istanbul, you've got the Eastern part and the Asian part, where they always say where the two, you know, where the worlds meet. And that was a fascinating environment. So all these, you know, learning that actually the world was more than I had thought it was. So and then coming back to the UK and looking at the UK from an international perspective, from a European perspective, and seeing how small-minded we could become sometimes. And I was so upset when we voted to leave the European Union. I thought it was a massive negative. But I mean, I suppose I'm not surprised because half the people I was, you know, half the people have never been overseas. They've never seen Europe like I saw it or experienced it, or seeing Eastern European wake up and flower to become much more Western in its approach. And I was lucky enough, incredibly lucky, to be able to be part of seeing how the countries grew out of their, you know, the Eastern Bloc lockdown and become more Westernized in their approach. So for me, that was the biggest adult learning I think I'd ever had, understanding that actually the world doesn't end at Dover, and actually looking at Dover from the perspective of continental Europe is a very different thing.
And you talked about you not being as a family or as a group, so you're on your own, in a different culture, different speaking, etc. How did you drive and influence that?
Sorry, I don't understand what you're asking, really.
So how did you build success there? You're in an environment that's quite challenging.
I think it's about fundamentals, isn't it? It's about fundamentally being interested in the person in front of you. What do they do? Why are they there? What's their reason for being there? When they're not doing that, what else are they doing? What are they interested in? It doesn't matter where you are in the world. The person in front of you has got a life, got a personality, got needs and feelings, and they're no different from you and I. The most difficult thing, actually, is when I went to China a few years ago now, because I went to do some hiking on the Great Wall of China because I hadn't done it before. Now, actually, the Chinese are incredibly inscrutable. They really are. It's really difficult getting through to them. So they're a culture I'd love to know more about. But again, I felt comfortable wherever I was in Europe because people are fundamentally the same. They just see things in a slightly different, from a slightly different perspective. So a human being is a human being.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
And then in terms of up to date, just describe again this, how successful this has been, the Rock on Cotswolds.
Oh, that's brilliant. We've had a great time. We launched it 5 years ago with a big party. We've had a lot of events since then. It's actually created quite a movement now. So we do a lot on social media. So if you're in London or anywhere else and you're trying to find something, you get hold of us on social media and we'll tell you where to go, what to do, you know, give you some ideas. We have inspired a lot of people to look at the Cotswolds in a different way. So the place I live in is gorgeous with sort of honey coloured cottages and beautiful. It is lovely, very toffee tin. But actually there is as much going on here as there is elsewhere. You just have to know where to look for it. And perhaps it's a little, but that's part of the fun. It's a bit like going to the Wild West. Only it's the Wild Southwest, I think you would call it.
But a beautiful area. And a final question from me, and I'm not sure I'll get an answer because you're so positive, but we do ask the question, what you wish you didn't know. And I'm intrigued. What things do you think you wish you didn't know or could have blocked out?
No, actually, I'm going to disagree with you. There is nothing I wish I didn't know. Knowledge is power. But the older you get, the less you realise you know. And that's the thing about it, isn't it, really? I did a degree late in life. I decided that the one time I ever felt sort of cowed and looked down on was going to meetings and all these people wearing their degrees on their shoulder. You know, I'm so clever because I got a degree in widgets, or I'm terribly clever, I got a degree in something, archaeology, you know. And I'm thinking, but actually, I don't think you make any more sense than I'm making. I think you're a bit stupid, really. But I can't say that because I got 5-0 levels. So what am I supposed to do? So I did a degree because I thought, well, actually, then I can wear my degree on my shoulder. So I think knowledge is a massively powerful thing, and none of us know enough, actually. But sometimes we shoot our mouths off when we don't know enough about something. Perhaps I think what I wish I knew is sometimes I kept my mouth shut when I didn't know enough about something that I was opining on. So I wish I kept my mouth shut. Don't we all?
You know, this is fantastic, Nikki. I mean, I think you've covered so much ground here, and I really admire the sense of adventure, but also the sense of getting things done. And it resonates throughout, your story. You come across as someone who won't take no for an answer, because you'll just figure out another way. You know, obstacles, may appear, but, there's a lot of ways, around, over, up, under, whatever, you'll figure out, how to get things done. Really admire that. And I think if it's that kind of, maybe pragmatic, willingness to try and to get things done that, we should all have. And, that one of the things I think we realize as we get older is how much how little we really do know, and how little we really do control, and how also little we really matter other than, to the people that we care about. And so, that what you've found through all the things that you've done, though, is that, there's very little that you can't do. And it's all because of your willingness to try and your resourcefulness in figuring out how to get it done. So thanks so much for sharing your story with us.
That's a pleasure. I hope it's been helpful. I hope I haven't talked too much.
No, it's been fascinating, Nikki. And, it's a corny adage, the university of life, but you definitely expressed that for me in the sense that I don't feel you've got any regrets. You just said, hey ho, park that and let's get on. And that's the biggest lesson I've got out of this. Yeah. Just get on with it. Glass half full.
Yeah.
And things will come your way. Yeah. So
they generally fall. Yes. I think so. It's a very trite thing to say, but being kind is good. Being kind, picking up litter, all those basic things that nobody else does.
Well, thank you very much, Nikki. And and good luck with growing the Cotswolds around the world. So,
All right. Well, thank you. It's been really good fun. And thank you for giving me the time to shout my mouth off about stuff. I really appreciate it.
We do hope you enjoyed this podcast. And thanks for listening to What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dorr. Please join us at whatiwishiknewshow.com. You can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Please share What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dawe with your friends. We welcome your feedback and recommendations of new podcast guests and ideas on topics. If you have business challenges, we're also available for advisory and consulting roles. We'd be delighted to listen and help. Just send us an email. Our address is hello@whatiwishiknewshow.com.